It's impossible, I think, to have a healthy, solid, love-filled marriage without the supernatural work of the Holy Spirit that's breaking us, causing us to surrender our rights and loving sacrificially. So I think the key starts with our surrendering ourselves to God instead of you focusing on, Lord, change my spouse.
Welcome to Family Life Today, where we want to help you pursue the relationships that matter most. I'm Shelby Abbott, and your hosts are Dave and Ann Wilson. You can find us at familylifetoday.com or on the Family Life app.
This is Family Life Today.
As parents, you pray your kids' whole life, and then when you send them off to college, you're hoping that their years at college will prepare them for life.
Yeah, that'll make a difference in their lives, that what they are gaining will be useful. We hope that they will follow Jesus and really discover his plan for their lives.
Yeah, I remember driving out of Chicago and looking in the rearview mirror back at this city.
This gigantic.
And I thought, I just dropped my middle son off in the heart of Chicago. Are we crazy? It was scary. And his little girlfriend's in the backseat. They were married before he graduated from college. But
and
I remember
she's sobbing.
And we are too.
It's a five-hour drive from
I remember thinking, did we do the right thing?
Me too.
You know, we should have put him in a cornfield in a little community college, but he's in Chicago. But I'll never forget when we visited the campus. Mm. And I don't know if it's still there. We'll find out today because we've got not only a former Moody Bible Institute student, but now the president of Moody Bible Institute, Mark Jobe, and his wife, Dee, in the studio. In fact, let me just say welcome to Family Life Today. You've never been here, right?
No, we've never been here, no. So it's great to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. And is it still there? When Austin and I visited, I can't remember where it was, but on sort of like a cement poster thing, it had 2 Timothy 2:15.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah. It's still there.
In the arch.
In the arch.
That's where it was?
In cement.
I just
remember verse is right there.
Looking up there, be a workman of the word, handle the word. And I remember looking up there like, is this a sign from God? This is what I hope. We all hope as parents. Your sons and daughters will be as adults. And I remember thinking, this is part of their mission here.
Yeah. And he loved his experience at Moody Bible.
Yeah.
And so it's really fun that this is part of what you do.
Mm-hmm. It is.
You also founded a church in Chicago. How many years ago?
1986. You know why I know that? Because it's the same year that we got married.
Mm-hmm. You got married and started a church the same year.
Yes.
All right, tell us this story. This
is pretty crazy. Even how did you meet?
You're not just the president, you're still the pastor. I mean, it's just this amazing life.
Let me say this first of all. You were sobbing dropping off your son. The last time we had welcoming of new students, several mothers were sobbing, dropping off their children. So I went up to one mother and I said, I know this is hard. I know you're probably holding back the tears. She looked at me and said, oh, no. She said, we're super excited. Now he's your problem. So I said, you could at least wait until you walked around the corner before you're giving high fives and cheering. You at least act like you're sorry.
So how did that go if you're getting married the same year you're starting a church? We started a church, and it's not easy.
No.
And marriage isn't easy. So how'd that go?
How'd it go, Dee?
You know, Mark, you did the right thing. You just asked your wife to answer. That's a good move.
Well, actually, Moody at that time only had a 3-year degree. You had to go somewhere else for your bachelor's. And so,
Dee, did you go to school there too?
Yeah.
Okay.
I didn't finish because someone had to support this man that was making $8,000 a year at the first church, at the church we started. And so I never finished, unfortunately. And so actually when we came, Mark was at Columbia International University finishing up his degree. I went there for a semester to get some more classes, came back, and 6 months later we got married.
Yeah.
Correct? I actually grew up in that church.
Did you?
Yeah. So it was a long story, but I grew up there as a little girl. So to see a church that I was raised in this neighborhood, it's called Back of the Yards, that never grew to more than 40 people. And Mark said, I'll give you a commitment for 3 years. I'll stay. They said, would you stay? He said, I'll give you a commitment for 3 years.
It was like a church plant because there was 18 people and they hadn't had a pastor, but it had been around for a while.
Mm. Now, is this the church that I read in your book, which, by the way, we didn't mention, but it's called What Now? How to Move into Your Next Season. Is this the church you talk about at the beginning?
Yes.
Yeah, I told Anna to drive over here because she didn't read that part of the book. I said, so you heard that another guy was going to candidate for that church. He pulled up, saw the building, and just drove away.
Yeah. Several.
Really?
Quite a few. Well, you know, they could only, this was an inner city church on the southwest side of Chicago, literally drug dealers on the corner, drive-by shootings, and their salary package was $8,000 a year. No insurance, no parsonage.
No insurance?
And so
I was the insurance carrier.
But and this is the neighborhood you grew up in.
Yeah.
Did you want to get out of here?
Well, I wanted to.
She wanted a beach in Spain.
Yeah. I thought he was taking me away, but I had a real heart for the people. Some of the same people were there that I did grow up with, and they were hurting. It was not a good situation. The pastor left them very wounded, and I called a friend of ours at Dallas Theological and said, Mark's looking for a place to minister for the summer. Do you have any? He said, go back. It was called the mission. Go back to the mission. They need help right now. And that's where we went, to just help the mission for the summer.
And for $8,000.
Well, I was 20 years old helping out. I still had a semester left in Bible college. And after the summer, they said, would you come and be the pastor here? And I'm like, well, I'm going to Spain. I plan on going to Spain. And I said, you know what? Let's pray about it. I said, I will come and help you out for 3 years until you can get a real pastor. Think about it. I'm 20 years old at this time, so no experience. They said, okay. So that's how we started. But it started exploding with people coming to Christ. So we just started seeing tons of people come to Jesus that were from all kinds of really difficult, challenging backgrounds.
Let me ask you this. Like, it starts exploding. What was your prayer at the very beginning? You have just nobody there. You know, it's so little. People,
I remember Mark saying he went to the church one day and he said, I'm just praying over the pews. Lord, you had 12 men. Give me 12 men. And he started praying and walking down the aisles, praying for God to fill those pews with some solid men that love the Lord.
You know what's funny, though? Years later, a reporter came in and she was doing a segment on mega churches. And she was not a believer, but she walked in our service. And the first comment she made was, wow, there's a lot of men in this church. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I'm glad you noticed, because I thought to myself, there was a time that I prayed, Lord, there were four men. I prayed, Lord, give us men. Hmm. And so I have a real passion. I speak at a lot of men's conferences as well, because I think not only in urban America, but across the country, we have a lot of men that are absentee fathers that are not speaking into raising their children. And I think in urban America, sometimes you see it even more. And so we're happy now that we're known for having a lot of men.
That's super powerful.
Yeah.
It really is. And, you know, I know a little bit of your backstory with your dad or your family in Spain. Is that what you saw growing up? I mean, you told me yesterday about your dad riding a horse or riding a donkey.
A donkey. It was a donkey.
I thought it was a horse.
It was a horse.
It was a horse
named Thrumple. Dad was kind of, he was a guy's guy, liked cars, liked to fix. He always had grease in his hands. He was saved at 18 and was going to be an electrical mechanic in the steel mills in northern Indiana. But God radically got a hold of his life, and he thought, okay, I want to go to the Amazon jungle, the most extreme thing that he could think of. Married my mother, who was studying to be a nurse, and they took off for South America. And there wasn't any opening or team in the Amazon jungles, but Chile. And so he would ride a horse up to the mountains of Chile to do Bible studies there. We lived in these real remote sort of villages, very rustic villages. And then he got on his BMW and he toured Mexico preaching. And then he had a bultaco that he rode through Spain looking for a city that had no gospel witness. And we landed in a city of 140,000 people that had no evangelical Protestant church. And that's where I grew up, in this city. But he was sort of this maverick pioneer, let's go all out for Jesus. And my mother was just as hardy. She's 85 years old, still lives in Spain.
Really?
Still lives in Spain. He's buried outside of the city that he threw his life into reaching for Christ. Mm-hmm. And there's a building built by the Spaniards, the first evangelical building in the city of Burgos. And there's a little plaque, a very small, inconspicuous plaque in the entrance of the building that says, to Robert Job, it's in Spanish, who loved us and taught us the ways of Jesus.
Wow.
Makes me emotional because I learned from my father what it was to, first of all, be a follower of Jesus, be a man, and love a woman.
Wow.
And
yeah, as you were saying it, I was thinking, yeah, I don't know you that well, but I'm like, you are your father's son.
Oh,
and then when you described the mom, I thought, I'm looking at.
Yeah, Dee, you are that person.
Yeah.
I mean, you guys are living a life very similar. I mean, your horse was a car, but you're driving into the the streets
to
of Chicago.
Urban city. Yeah.
Where a lot of people are running away from. I don't want to be there. I'm doing everything I can to get out. And you're saying, we're going to go in and ask God for 12 men.
Mm-hmm.
You got me, Terry.
And
me
so we had really a missionary heart. I thought I was going to go to the mission field, and to stay in the U.S. felt a little bit like I'm compromising. To be honest with you, to buy a house felt like, man, I'm caving in because my parents moved 14 times, several different countries. They
never
didn't buy a house
home.
Because they felt God could take us and move us, and we want to pioneer. So we were bred on that sort of spirit of you know, you're all in for Jesus, you live, you move, you throw yourself into the cause of the gospel. And
they came to the States to help us for 2 years early on, and they came literally after 30 years in Spain at that time, or 25 years, with an army backpack, a duffel bag
each.
That's all they had.
This is not my home.
This is not my home. And they came and ministered, and they lived in a tiny two-room in our apartment building in a little basement place, and loved people. And that's what people say about him. He loved God and loved people so, so much. Very simple.
What you said was he threw his life into Jesus, into Christ.
Yes.
And as you said that, I thought, I'm Terry too. How many other things are we throwing our lives into?
Yeah.
Things that don't matter. At the time, it feels so important. I'm thinking of sports for our kids.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of our houses and our retirement. There's so many things that we think will bring us fulfillment and security.
Yeah.
I thought about, that'd be a good question to ask our kids. What do you think I'm throwing my life into?
Yeah.
I asked that one time when our kids were younger, and they said,
Don't go there. Don't
sports.
Even tell them.
We're throwing our lives into sports. But it made me think, like, that's not what I want them to say. I want them to say, it's Jesus.
And so
that story is super inspiring. Your dad's still impacting all of us to share that story.
Yeah, you talk about legacy. I mean, here's my thought. So many people, and I'm sure you get the same thing, ask you, how do I raise an on-fire Christ follower, you know, my kids, their parents.
Because you have a son that is working with you, who's preaching.
Yeah. By God's grace, all three of our children, I have a 24, 29, and 30-year-old, all three of them are following Jesus, love the Lord. I say by the grace of God, in spite of our mistakes, in spite of our issues.
Well, you know, what I think is so often Christian parents think that our answer to them to raise a godly Christ follower as an adult is get them in a Christian school, get them in a good church, which obviously great stuff.
Yes.
But I think you just showed it. It's you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Live on fire for Jesus. It'll just permeate. And again, that doesn't guarantee anything.
Right.
There's no magic formula. But man, watching you watch your parents and now you're.
Yeah.
Is that it? Is that the most important thing?
My son, Josiah, just wrote him a really nice letter again. He's a great writer. Wrote Mark a letter this past year. And again said, Dad, you know, you are who you are all the time. You're not one person at home and one person in the pulpit or the church. You are who you are because of the Lord, of course. But yeah, I think our kids have seen that. I come from a different family.
Tell us about yours, Dee.
My parents were Christians, and actually we were raised in this little storefront church. My dad was a from that neighborhood. There was a guy who came in from the suburbs and started this little storefront thing for neighborhood kids. And so long story short, he came to Christ. He raised us to go to church and to love God, but he
was a great, he was a hard worker, extremely hard worker, and a great father in the sense of loving his kids. He wasn't a great husband.
Mm. So I saw a lot of turmoil and a lot of that at home, which was, you know, was just unhealthy for all of us. But he made it go to church every Sunday, Sunday night, Wednesday prayer meeting. But I didn't really see it as lived out as Mark had seen it. Actually, when we came back from our honeymoon, I remember sitting at the table at Connie's Pizza and just saying, I really understand now what it means to truly be loved and accepted. And that was only a month later and after we got married. But anyway.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds like you didn't date too long.
Well, we ended up dating 3 years.
Oh, you did? 3 years?
Yeah, because I was in college, and I met her when I was 18, so we weren't quite ready to get married yet. But, 3 years into it, as soon as I graduated, almost the week that I graduated from college, I proposed to her. I don't know where I got this, but I had heard somewhere, you know, people use the term love too flippantly. So while we were dating, I told her, the day that I say I love you is the day I'm going to ask you to marry me. So I never said I loved you. 3 years of dating, I like you a lot, a lot of work around.
Did you know he loved you?
Oh, yeah.
You did.
Oh, yeah.
But he didn't say it.
No, he didn't say it.
So I said, hey, let's go to, it was a state capitol in Columbia, South Carolina. And I said, hey, let's go take some pictures there. So I actually had done mime.
I performed
a mime.
I wish I could tell you to do it right now.
And I had blown up like three balloons within each other.
And there was a note in each one.
And there was
one.
So she would pop a balloon and a note would pop out and she'd read it and I would act out. And it was our story, how we met.
I mimed our story
and then stopped until she popped the next balloon. And then I'd mime out the rest. And then the final balloon, which is the small balloon, she popped it and it said,
I love you.
I love you. And she knew that I had told her, the day I say I love you, I'm going to ask you to marry me. So she looked, she had, and then I got on my knees right there as a mime, and I asked her to marry me.
That is super cool.
That's super unique and cool.
I thought mine was pretty good.
That was good. Let me ask you guys, because we talk about marriage a lot, but if you have a listener and they're like, our marriage is struggling, you know, maybe the way you were, Dee, in your family with your parents, like, you know, we love our kids, we're together because we love our kids, but our marriage is in turmoil. You guys have three kids that are walking with Jesus, your grandparents. You're doing a lot. But as you talk to people that are struggling in your marriage, what would you say to them? I know that you can't give all the answers, but what are the things you would say? These are the foundational things that have made us strong.
I would start by saying it starts with your walk with God. You can look at your spouse and make a list of everything that's wrong with them. And you can say, if they would respect me more, love me more, show me more, then I would in turn be. And so many times we wait because we say they have issues. And I think it starts with saying, okay, God, I'm going to be the person God, that you've called me to be. I have my imperfections. I'm going to surrender to you. And God, give me the capacity and power to love my spouse with their imperfections, just like you've loved me with my imperfections. And I think it starts there. It's impossible, I think, to have a healthy, solid, love-filled marriage without the supernatural work of the Holy Spirit that's breaking us, causing us to surrender our rights and loving sacrificially. So I think the key starts with our surrendering ourselves to God instead of you focusing on, Lord, change my spouse.
I don't think we can get rid of that habit of seeing the negatives in our spouse unless we do surrender to Christ.
Yeah.
He's the one that meets our needs, not our spouse. I've tried to get Dave to meet my needs. I tried.
Yeah.
And he does. He's an amazing husband, but he's not enough to meet all of my needs the way Jesus is.
When we were at Columbia, down at Columbia, It was just the Lord. I went to Moody, and then I went to Columbia for a semester. There was a missionary there, Cash Godbold, just went to be with the Lord. Mm-hmm. He had been in Africa for 25 years. He was only on campus that one semester in the grad school on a Saturday, teaching for 10 weeks, Scriptural Solutions for Sensitive People. Hmm. That's why the Lord brought me there. Hmm. And for 10 weeks, I sat and wept as he taught about how we need to be filled with the love of God. And if we are not filled with love of God, he had a teacup, a glass, a bucket, and a barrel on stage. Well, Mark's a teacup, person who wakes up in the morning, sun's shining, got a job, that's all he needs. And then we went all the way on the other side, and I'm a barrel. So I have this insatiable need, God, you know, of the emotion of love. Fill me. And I felt like I was, you know, I was like, what is going on? Why am I feeling so insecure? We've been dating 3 years. And what's going on here? And it was the Lord. So when I talked to Mr. Godbold, he said, Dee, this is what you need to do. And he sat down, both of us, and he said, Mark, and this is what you need to do. I had to find verses that spoke God's love to me to keep me filled. And Mark had to work on verses more of gentleness and kindness and meekness. And just because he doesn't have as great a need, he has to ask the Lord to help him be sensitive to meet those needs that I have.
Mm. Yeah. Is he that guy?
Oh, yeah. Most of the time.
Yeah.
So she had to learn.
She had to learn, my identity's in you. I need to be filled. And Mark can't fill all those needs. Mm-hmm. And I had to learn, she's not wired like me. There's a greater sensitivity that she has. And so I have to be more aware of her needs. And so we both had a learning curve.
Yeah.
And again, we're 30-some years into our marriage and we're still learning, but it works very well. And to be honest, he said, she will make or break your ministry. And I think just her understanding sensitivity of people as we minister to people has made us much more dynamic in ministry than I would have ever been trying to do ministry on my own.
I'm Shelby Abbott, and you've been listening to David Ann Wilson with Mark and Dee Job on Family Life Today. Mark has written a book called What Now? How to Move Into Your Next Season. You know, in the midst of a spiritual lull or a midlife crisis or an unforeseen pandemic, maybe, at some point, all Christians feel the need to readdress and reorient to move toward God's calling in their lives. And Mark's book, What Now?, is for anyone who wants to emerge from that kind of stagnation that we feel and envision what could be best for the next season of life. You can pick up a copy of Mark's book, What Now?, at familylifetoday.com. And if you want to help support more conversations just like the one you heard today, you can go online and make a donation to Family Life. And as our thank you, we want to send you a copy of Mary DeMuth's Love, Pray, Listen. Mary was a guest earlier this week, and she talks about parenting your wayward adult kids with joy. That book, Love, Pray, Listen, is going to be our gift to you when you partner with us financially. You can go online to familylifetoday.com or give us a call with your donation at 800-358-6329. Again, that number is 800, F as in family, L as in life, and then the word today. And if you know anyone who needs to hear conversations like today's, would you share it from wherever you get your podcasts? And while you're there, you can really help others learn about Family Life Today by leaving us a review. Now, tomorrow, Mark and Dee Job are back in the studio with David Ann Wilson to talk about creating a new legacy. They're going to go over the transformative power and courage that's required to break free from the past and embrace a new path. We hope you'll join us. On behalf of David Ann Wilson, I'm Shelby Abbott. We'll see you back next time for another edition of Family Life Today. Family Life Today is a donor-supported production of Family Life, a crew ministry helping you pursue the relationships that matter most.